The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, April 2019, Volume 20, Number 4, and this is the fourth of four installments of the April issue. On this month's cover, Oprah stands against a verdant backdrop of a tropical rainforest. Her bright red, ankle-length, gauzy red caftan stands out against the green foliage. She's ready for a hiking adventure with her whittled walking stick, straw hat, and tan leather hiking boots. The cover quote from Oprah this month is, "The earth has taken excellent care of us. Let's return the favor." And let's start off this fourth installment of April with advice from Martha Beck. This is part one of a three-part series called Weathering the Storm. In the wake of a disastrous flood, Sarah Kress has finally managed to rebuild her home. She's hoping Life Coach Martha Beck can help her recover her spirit. For Houston resident Sarah Kress, August 27, 2017, was a living nightmare. She woke to the sound of rain. Within an hour, the floodwaters of Hurricane Harvey had destroyed the home she and her husband owned, and most of their possessions were 3 feet underwater. Insurance allowed the couple to rebuild, which took nearly a year. However, Sarah's still dealing with the disaster's psychic damage. The 41-year-old says, quote, "I'm agitated and depressed. I've been eating and drinking too much, and I'm so easily overwhelmed," end quote. She lost her creative spark, too, going on to say, quote, "I'm a poet, but I'm having a hard time writing about this experience. It seems like nothing matters because everything could be taken away again," end quote. Fortunately, life coach Martha Beck is coming to the rescue. Let's listen in on their first session. Martha Beck, "Sarah, how are you?" Sarah Kress, "Excited, but on edge. A storm's coming this weekend, even though it's not the usual season." Martha, "Tell me how that's affecting you." Sarah, "It's hard to sleep because the rains often come overnight. When our house flooded, we woke up at 5 a.m. and the water was starting to come in. I think that's part of my insomnia. I have to stay awake to make sure we're safe." Martha, "The rain is triggering your trauma, the way a backfiring car might trigger a soldier who's been traumatized by war. Are you having flashbacks?" Sarah, "Yeah, I'll be going about my day and suddenly see the water coming into the house. Or I'll think about some random thing I lost, like a suitcase, and picture it floating." Martha, "When that happens, do you grieve or push the thought away?" Sarah, "Part of me thinks, what's the point of dwelling? I'm still mourning the mementos, though. Letters from my grandmothers, my high school yearbooks." Martha, "In those moments of grief, how do you feel?" Sarah, "For the first couple of months, I would tear up, but then I'd shut down. And despite my nighttime insomnia, when I get really anxious, I feel like I have to go to sleep." Martha, "You're reacting from the emotional, animal part of your brain, which is what we do when we're thrown into traumatic situations. We shift into survival mode. If an animal is in danger and can't fight or flee, it freezes in hopes that the threat will pass. Sleep is your way of freezing. Your brain saying, let's just shut this whole thing down. You have the classic symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, as I'm sure you know." Sarah, "I know." Martha, "Your traumatic memories are imprinted on the emotional part of your brain, and the logical, rational part can't process those memories because they're locked away. That's why you feel numb. But when something in your environment triggers that vivid sensory recall, you may have a volcanic internal response." Does that sound familiar? Sarah, Yes, I got a trauma workbook, hoping that would help, but I can't bring myself to do the exercises. It was too much. Martha, you can't really resolve a serious trauma on your own. You need a compassionate witness who can listen and acknowledge what you've experienced. Have you told anyone the details of what happened that day? Sarah, the thought of that makes me weepy. Martha, the fact that your body is allowing an emotional response right now is a good sign. It means that maybe you're ready to trust me just a little. Do you think you could tell me what you remember? We can stop any time. Sarah, with a deep breath. Okay, I woke up before my alarm, and when I looked out the front window, water was forming enormous pools in the yard. It was still dark, and I could see the street lights reflected in the water. I woke my husband and said, I think we need to be prepared. Martha, what did that feel like? Sarah, everything became a blur. We were rushing around, grabbing whatever we could. My husband went into the office, and I heard sloshing. I felt crushed, like, oh no, it's really happening. As I was trying to figure out what to put on, my feet started to get wet. The water was seeping up through the floor. Then I started hyperventilating. Martha, I'm sure. Sarah, my husband and I were yelling at each other about what to do. At first, we went to the attic. We knew we weren't supposed to because we could get trapped there. You're supposed to get on the roof, but we were panicking. We couldn't find the cats, but I grabbed our two dogs and scrambled up. My husband handed me an axe in case we had to break out. Then he went back down to shut off the lights. I could hear splashing, and everything went dark. That's when he yelled that we should get out while we could and go to our friend Josh's, who lives close by on higher ground. By that point, the water was a couple of feet deep. I came down, still holding the dogs. The water filled my rubber boots, and there's this thing I can't get out of my brain. My husband had given me this really cool neon sign for my birthday. It was plugged in, and somehow when the water reached a certain point, the sign turned on. Martha, so weird. Sarah, but only halfway. It was buzzing, giving off this awful half-light. That's the last thing I remember before we left the house. Outside, it was still partially dark and raining. We were slogging through the water, stumbling because we couldn't see our feet. Martha, how are you feeling right now? Sarah, like I could cry. Martha, did your breathing change as we talked? Sarah, it got quicker and my muscles are tense. I think part of that is holding back tears. Martha, that's called armoring. You can't loosen those muscles because as soon as you do, emotions start to come up and there's still a part of you that says no, no, no. This is a normal response to trauma. The problem for humans is that, unlike animals, we get stuck in that frozen feeling. After this experience, did you ever physically shake? Sarah, I'm shaky all the time, but that actually started years ago. I have torticollis, which means my neck muscles are painfully twisted and my head tends to wobble a bit. But since Harvey, it's gotten much worse. Martha, after an animal escapes from a predator or a disaster, it trembles violently, which is an important part of recovery. We don't know why, but if you physically, violently shake after a trauma, it seems you're less likely to have the symptoms of post-traumatic stress. Sarah, that's interesting because I took a trauma course for Harvey victims, and there was an exercise called the unseen shaking, where you shake your entire body for 6 minutes, which seems so long, and then dance. It was the best I'd felt in months. Martha, did you try it at home? Sarah, yeah, but it was strange. Doing it in a group felt very healing. Martha, yes, finding a community is essential. I'd like you to search online for tension and trauma releasing exercises, or TRE. They were developed by the trauma specialist David Burchelli and involve shaking. If you can find a TRE group, I recommend it. There are also videos, so you can keep trying at home. Put on some rhythmic, rapid music, think about that night, and shake. It may feel more natural to start dancing and then let the shaking take over. And it will, although it sounds bizarre. This might help you through the coming storm I know you're worried about. Sarah, I feel low-level nauseated when I even think about rain. Martha, have you made any changes in your emergency preparedness? Sarah, yes, now we have life jackets and emergency backpacks, and when we rebuilt the house, we made adjustments that will help us recover faster next time. Martha, if another flood came, you'd have a completely different experience. Sarah, absolutely. Martha, next time you won't be helpless. The flood put you at the mercy of a force beyond your control, and you're finding it hard to let go of that feeling, which is why even daily life seems overwhelming. But remember, you're a smart, capable woman who knows how to take care of yourself. I want to mention a couple of other things. You're a poet, right? Sarah, I am. Martha, what I'm about to suggest sounds counterintuitive, but as a writer, you may find it easier than most people would. This weekend, don't try to shut out the rain. See if you can approach it in the way you'd play a game. Try to stay open and loose. Thinking of coping as a game can give you a sense of mastery. Instead of dissociating, you're engaging with your circumstances in an empowered way. And see if you can notice beauty in what's happening. Maybe you'll be inspired to write afterwards. Imagine you're writing a poem with advice for someone who's about to go through a flood. Sarah, that's a good assignment. Martha, Sarah, remember, healing is a process. You may find you need to fall apart more before you pull yourself together, and that's okay. Sarah, thanks for saying that. Martha, and don't forget to shake, shake, shake. It's the key to the kingdom, as you will see. Martha Beck is the author of most recently, Diana Herself, An Allegory of Awakening. And now let's look at the last recipes for Let's Eat this month. What's cooking? Smarty Plants. These tasty veggie patties from the Pollens, sisters Tracy, Dana, and Lori, and Mom Corky, co-authors of the new cookbook, Mostly Plants, won't leave you wondering, where's the beef? And there's a tray here with these round, crispy, golden patties and a bowl of sauce. The philosophy of Michael Pollan, our oft-quoted brother and son, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, has long been our way of life, and the environmental benefits of consuming less beef are more relevant today than ever. The huge amounts of energy and greenhouse gas emissions involved in cattle production pose a major threat, so making thoughtful food choices is a simple way to reduce our carbon footprint. We like to incorporate as many vegetables as possible into our meals, and veggie burgers are the perfect vehicle. These patties are a family favorite since they're savory, crispy, packed with Mediterranean herbs and spices, and based on our go-to nutritional powerhouse, chickpeas. They offer plenty of protein, ensuring your meatless meal will fill you up. Cauliflower, spinach, and chickpea patties. This makes 6 servings with a total time of 1 hour and 15 minutes. Preheat oven to 350 degrees. Line a rimmed baking sheet with parchment paper. Fill a stock pot fitted with a steamer basket with 2 inches of water. Over medium-high heat, bring to a simmer. Add 3 cups cauliflower, flowerettes, cover, and cook until just tender, 8 to 10 minutes. Meanwhile, in a large bowl, mash 1 15-ounce can of chickpeas. Add cauliflower and mash until mixture is smashed but not smooth. Add 1 10-ounce package frozen chopped spinach, thawed and squeezed of liquid. 3/4 cup finely chopped red bell pepper, 4 scallions, white and light green parts only, finely chopped. 3 garlic cloves minced and 2 tablespoons of finely chopped flat leaf parsley. Mix well. Stir in 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin, 1/2 teaspoon of ground turmeric, and 1 teaspoon of sea salt, and 1/4 teaspoon of ground black pepper. Add 3 large eggs, lightly beaten, and 1/2 cup panko breadcrumbs. Stir to combine. In a shallow dish, place another 1/2 cup of panko. Shape about 1/3 cup chickpea mixture into 1/2-inch thick patty and coat lightly with panko. Place on waxed paper and repeat with remaining mixture to make 12 to 14 patties. In a small non-stick skillet over medium heat, warm 2 tablespoons of olive oil until shimmering. Add a batch of patties and cook until golden brown, flipping halfway, about 4 minutes per side. Transfer to baking sheet. Wipe skillet clean, add 2 tablespoons of oil, and cook remaining patties. Place baking sheet in oven and bake patties for 10 minutes. Transfer to a serving platter, season with additional salt and pepper, and serve hot with the sauce of your choice, such as tahini, salsa, or spiced yogurt. And on a side note, a 2018 Oxford University study found that if everyone adopted a plant-based diet, we could cut food-related emissions by up to 73%. And now, in the reading room, we have a picture here of Toni Morrison with her gray dreadlocks pulled back together behind her. The Seer in Our Midst. Essayist Emily Bernard contemplates the legacy of Toni Morrison and her magnificent new nonfiction collection. And there's also a picture here of Morrison receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Barack Obama in 2012. Emily writes, "I was 16 when I first read Toni Morrison. A friend of my parents gave me Morrison's earliest novel, The Bluest Eye, the searing and tender story of Pecola Breedlove, an 11-year-old black girl who yearns for blue eyes, which she thinks would make her beautiful. Pecola burrowed her way inside me and touched my own fears and insecurities as an African-American female growing up in the South. But when I examined the author photo on the back cover, I saw that Pecola's creator was a woman about as old as my mother and father. How was it, I wondered, that this nearly middle-aged stranger could see and understand my secret self so clearly? What magic powers did she have?" Morrison, who was a book editor at the time, published The Bluest Eye almost 50 years ago when she was 39. Since then, her otherworldly prowess has generated 11 novels, as well as plays, children's books, and commentary. At 88, the Nobel Prize winner is a titan of the written word. The source of self-regard, selected essays, speeches, and meditations is both dazzlingly heady and deeply personal. A rumination on her literary career and artistic mission, which is to reveal and honor the aching beauty and unfolding drama of African-American life. Quote, "The act of writing is a kind of act of faith," end of quote, Morrison observes in The Source of Self-Regard, which gives us a behind-the-scenes look at her influences and process. Quote, "The painterly language of Song of Solomon was not useful to me in Beloved," end of quote, is but one precious nugget of insight. She begins a work of fiction with images that haunt her, then journeys into the meaning of those images. The Bluest Eye was inspired by a childhood friend's worrisome comment. Sula, by the loaded way in which her mother and her friend said another woman's name, Song of Solomon, by the rage Morrison felt over her father's death. She wrote Beloved, which earned the Pulitzer Prize in 1988 after visualizing a set of slaves' footprints that, quote, disappear and return only to disappear again, end of quote. The source of self-regard is also about remembrance, a finely calibrated congregation of memorials. Part one opens with The Dead of September 11th, a talk Morrison delivered at Princeton on September 13, 2001. The next two sections feature, respectively, a tribute to Martin Luther King Jr. and a eulogy for James Baldwin, in which she thanks her friend for giving her, quote, a language to dwell in, a gift so perfect it seems my own invention, end of quote. It's unlikely we will see a memoir from Toni Morrison. She signed a contract to write one several years ago, but then canceled it on the grounds that her life was, quote, not interesting, end of quote. Readers of this book will certainly disagree. Have there been many minds more intriguing or writers more sublimely challenging? The source of self-regard excavates Morrison's vast well of knowledge. Open its pages and receive. And now we have an item here in the reading room called Long Story Short, and it's entitled The One She Pushed Away. Regrets, Frances Park has had a few, starting with the carelessness that cost her dearly. Frances writes, whether it's a gift or a curse, I remember old loves like they happened yesterday, and so I remember you. I was just out of college and working as an admin at George Washington University to take free writing classes. My boss, an ancient Norwegian woman whose disdain for students and professors alike amused me to no end. She thought highly of you, though, the youngest prof in the program, and was vocal about it, like you were a song she wanted me to hear. She told me you were 29 and divorced, with custody of a little boy and girl. I took note. How grown up it would be, I thought, to date a divorced man with kids. On our first date, we were accidentally seated at tables in different rooms, wondering if the other had had a change of heart. We found each other, though. In time, you told me about your childhood in Pennsylvania, your first love, the joys and challenges of being a father. I'd always liked listening to people's stories, the bone-deep stuff, what made them, what broke them. I could listen to you all night back then, curled up like a kitten on your lap. And yet, I wasn't faithful to you, I think you knew, but stayed silent. I have no excuse. That's who I was then, someone who didn't trust love. I was a coward, afraid to give you my whole heart. Still, we had fun. We drove around D.C. and wandered into open houses in Upper Northwest, where the Blue Bloods lived. We hopped into your Triumph and took off for Atlantic City, where a woman with pancake makeup yelled at me for playing her slot machine. We toasted the sale of your first book. We scouted sites for the chocolate shop I dreamed of opening. We bought food at the Safeway at the Watergate and cooked in your cozy kitchen, then sat down to dinner with your dream children, then ages 3 and 8, who never fussed. You often expressed your desire to have more kids with me. I said nothing in response. Then, on the phone, you broke things off. You said, quote, I don't want to see you anymore, end of quote. I sat in my office, shaken. What had led you to this? You didn't tell me. If I had to guess, I'd say you'd heard or saw something that made you think too hard about me. But soon after, on a sunny Sunday morning in an Arlington grocery store, I saw you in line buying fruit. Without a word, I took you home with me, the breakup erased, as if it had been a dream. A year or so later, you told me you were moving back to Pennsylvania. Taking care of the kids was too much, and your mom was willing to help. Maybe you wanted me to ask you to stay, but that would have meant my becoming a wife and stepmother, and I fancied a grander life, one full of experiences and travel and adventure. I thought that was what lay ahead. I was so naive. Our last night together was tearful, and the next morning you were gone. I figured I'd never hear from you again. But your letters began arriving, pages of gushing love. You visited, then visited again. By the time you called one afternoon and said, quote, I never came out and asked you, so I'm going to ask you now, will you marry me? End of quote. I was already gone. The sound of your voice like an echo from some ancient cave. I think I scoffed. I'd always known you'd marry me in a heartbeat. My answer was no. We spoke once, perhaps twice after that, long enough for you to learn that I'd left GW and found a spot for my shop. The shop that would, it turned out, take up all my time. The jet-setting life never materialized. Years passed, then more, and whenever love disappointed, I thought of you. How you once showed up at my office and stood in the doorway holding a rose. How you gave me small stud earrings, the first diamonds I'd ever owned. A few years ago, your daughter showed up at my shop. I didn't recognize this beautiful lady, 10 years old the last time I saw her. She had gotten a job in D.C., and you'd encouraged her to find me. We made a lunch date, and she filled me in on you. Happily remarried, still teaching. Not long after, you emailed. Your tone was polite, because we're strangers now. I apologized for my coldness, my thoughtlessness, my dismissiveness, my mistake. You had no memory of it. You remembered instead, quote, a great girl who loved to write, end of quote. We went back and forth a few times, and that was that. Eventually, I did get married. We were wrong for each other. That story ended, too. Except no story ever really ends. If I think of you, the story continues. There is comfort in that. I'm no longer young and no longer cowardly. So let me say one more thing. I should have married you. Certainly I've romanticized you over the years, but there is one thing I do know. You were a good man who deserved better than what I gave you. Frances Park is the author of 10 books, including the novel When My Sister Was Cleopatra Moon. And now, let's finish up the Feeling Good section of the magazine, which we read most of in the third installment. And this one-page article is our health hero, A World of Difference. A former nurse is diverting medical supplies from landfills to clinics in need. The sickest patients lay in street clothes on bare mattresses, others stretched out on the floor of the large ward. A doctor making his rounds bent over to examine one patient's wound, then retaped it with the same dressing before moving on to the next patient without changing his gloves. Nearby, old glass syringes waited on a dirty white tray. As the doctor explained to Elizabeth McClellan, an American nurse visiting the hospital in Quetta, Pakistan, he didn't have basics like linens, disposable needles, or gauze. McClellan, who was working as the director of nursing for a Saudi Arabian hospital, thought, someday when I'm back in the U.S., I'm going to do something about this. In 2007, she kept her promise by revising a simple solution to help the desperately ill-equipped clinics she'd seen in Asia and Africa. She knew that to limit infections, U.S. medical centers discard unused supplies from patient and operating rooms. As a result, it's estimated that hospitals pay a combined $10 billion in disposal fees every year to unload more than 2.5 million tons of trash, much of which ends up in landfills. By diverting some of it, McClellan realized she could help hospitals cut costs and reduce waste while providing supplies to facilities that would otherwise go without. She stationed cardboard boxes in the storage rooms of the hospital in Portland, Maine, where she worked, asking nurses and housekeepers to collect unused supplies. The boxes quickly overflowed with catheters, syringes, and gowns, which McClellan loaded into her car. Her cellar began filling with wound care materials, as well as wheelchairs and crutches. Soon her house was stuffed with 11,000 pounds of goods, with just enough room for a path to the door. In 2009, McClellan rented a warehouse and founded a nonprofit, Partners for World Health. Today, she, her staff of six, and hundreds of volunteers gather supplies from a network of New England hospitals, sort them at four warehouses, and ship them abroad. McClellan also leads missions to educate doctors and nurses on surgery, primary health care, and cancer prevention. On one such trip in 2012, she worked at a tent clinic in the mountains outside Cusco, Peru. It was dusk when a woman arrived with her 7-year-old son. 4 years earlier, he had broken his leg. Untreated, it set improperly, leaving him unable to walk. His mother pushed him for miles in a wheelbarrow, arriving just before the clinic closed and just after McClellan had stowed a walker in her truck. McClellan says, quote, "I saw her and said, 'Oh my God, I think we need our walker,'" end of quote. The boy was grinning as he began slowly moving along with his new device. In 2018, Partners for World Health distributed an estimated 250,000 pounds of equipment during missions via overseas shipments and within the U.S. Partners for World Health, quote, "allows us to provide clients with costly materials that aren't covered by insurance, like incontinence supplies, which can greatly improve quality of life," end of quote, says Meredith Anderson, a program manager for the nonprofit Southern Maine Agency on Aging. McClellan tells our young volunteers, quote, "make a commitment to something greater than your own self-interests. If we all did that, we would make a huge difference in our country and our world," end of quote. Let's move now to the section of the magazine that used to be called Oh Beautiful and is now Beautiful with an exclamation point. And the first page, against a white backdrop, we have lovely pink rose petals that have been arranged to look beautiful. They're loose petals that have been arranged to look almost like a peony, and in the middle, positioned to look like a stem, is a makeup brush with a natural bristle kind of fat end on it, and the brush is kind of a spearmint green, and its handle, acrylic, is embossed with kind of a diamond pattern. And then the metal part that kind of holds the bristles together is called the ferrule, and that has been painted that kind of spearmint green and a little bit of a metallic paint. And it has this emblem on it with a crown and then R and L and the word Moda. Clean sweep is what they call this. The Royal and Lang Nickel Moda Renew Complete Brush Set, $20, motabrush.com, gives new meaning to the phrase moral fiber. Vegan bristles sit atop a handle crafted from a completely biodegradable plant-based polymer. And when you're ready to replace your brushes, the company, in partnership with TerraCycle, will disassemble the components, the bristles, the handle, and the metal ferrule, for proper recycling. And in the beautiful section of the magazine, we have an article entitled A Gorgeous Future. You want to look great while respecting the planet, right? Here's some good news. The beauty industry is undergoing an Earth-first makeover. The biotech trailblazer. Former fragrance exec Marcella Cacci launched the skincare line One Ocean Beauty in 2018 with a simple mission: to help protect the health of the oceans. The brand harnesses blue biotechnology, which involves reproducing marine extracts from algae, kelp, and seaweed in the lab rather than harvesting them from the sea. This means there's no impact on the ocean's natural beauty. Quote, "We never hurt the biodiversity," end of quote, says Kachi, who adds that the brand has also donated $250,000 to Oceana, the largest global nonprofit focused solely on ocean conservation. She goes on to say, quote, "Sustainability is no longer a choice but a necessity," end of quote. The issue, waste. A staggering 8 million metric tons of plastic ends up in the ocean every year, with countless pieces of bottle caps and straws in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is actually two large masses between Japan and the U.S. West Coast. If current trends continue, it's predicted that by 2050, plastic will outweigh fish in our oceans, and 12 billion metric tons of it will sit in landfills. The beauty industry, which produces billions of plastic packaging units annually, has a lot to answer for. What's being done? Plenty. Unilever and L'Oreal have committed to using 100% recyclable or compostable packaging by 2025. Procter & Gamble, the Uber company behind Pantene, Head & Shoulders, and Herbal Essences, has pledged the same by 2030. Beginning this year, hair care brand Kevin Murphy is going all in, sourcing its packaging from reclaimed ocean plastic, a move that will save more than 360 tons of new plastic annually. Since 2011, Garnier has partnered with TerraCycle to tackle previously unrecyclable beauty packaging, diverting approximately 11.2 million empties from landfills. And at the World Economic Forum in January, a consortium of brands, including REN, Clean Skincare, and The Body Shop, announced participation in Loop, a shopping program that will offer products in durable packaging that can be returned, sanitized, and reused, like old-school milk bottles. It's set to launch in the New York City area and France this spring. What you can do. Excuse us for shouting, but recycle. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, recycling just 10 plastic bottles saves enough energy to power a laptop for more than 25 hours. Since products used in the bathroom tend to have a low recycling rate, people typically keep their bins in the kitchen. Make it easier for yourself by keeping a ready receptacle next to the shower. Need more incentive? Kiehl's, Lush, and MAC offer freebies when you bring in empties, and others including Origins and Tinnaburton, with nail salons in New York City, Los Angeles, and Austin, will accept containers from other brands as well. When shopping, gravitate towards items without excess packaging, or none at all. Lush's new Naked Concept stores offer bath products, hair care in bar form, and facial soaps with no packaging whatsoever. Or look for a label that specifies 100% recycled content. Beauty products can have some ugly effects on the environment, choking landfills with trash and polluting our waterways. Thankfully, companies large and small are stepping up their sustainability game, prioritizing the responsible sourcing of ingredients, implementing earth-friendly manufacturing processes, and experimenting with inventive recycling programs. But we all have a role to play. Even the tiniest gestures make an impact, right down to the number of styling products we use in our hair. And here's more on how we can help. Another one of the big issues, squandering our resources. The way plant ingredients in your creams and shampoos are farmed affects local communities and ecosystems, and a product's overall carbon footprint. One of the most egregious examples is palm oil, whose derivatives appear in a whopping 70% of cosmetics. Indiscriminate building of palm oil plantations in Indonesia and Malaysia has decimated rainforests, and research indicates that deforestation releases more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than all the cars and trucks in the world combined. Also, most personal care products use water in manufacturing and as a main ingredient, and the availability of clean, drinkable water is expected to nosedive by 2050, thanks to climate change, pollution, and increased demand. So what's being done? Mega companies are making major changes. L'Oreal, which has committed to being deforestation-free by 2020, and Estee Lauder are working closely with the global nonprofit Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil to ensure that their cultivation methods and sourcing have minimal negative environmental impact. So is Unilever, the parent company of Dove, St. Ives, and Ponds, which released its entire supply chain to the public, promising to source all its palm oil sustainably. That's a big deal, given that Unilever brands go through more than 1 million metric tons of the stuff per year. In addition, Unilever and L'Oreal are putting resource efficiency front and center, devising innovative ways to use less water in production and with products themselves. Low water use shampoo, fast rinse conditioners. One of the most exciting developments, though, is brought to us by biotechnology, which companies are using to create environmentally responsible ingredients. The skincare line, Biosense, makes its squalene, a naturally occurring oil traditionally derived from shark livers or olives, from renewable sugarcane. And the brand Alginus Key Anti-Agers, algaronic acid, and microalgae oil come from sustainable algae. What you can do at home, start by being mindful of your water use. Turn off the shower while shaving and skip a shampoo occasionally. If you want to go full-on farm to face, choose green beauty standouts like Jurlique, Juice Beauty, Dr. Hauska, and Tata Harper. They all grow botanicals on their own farms. Otherwise, look for labels such as EcoCert, which guarantees the use of renewable ingredients. Here are some more Eco Picks. The rose extracts in Lancome Absolu Revitalizing and Brightening Soft Cream are obtained through an exclusive biotech process. And this product is $208 at Lancome-USA.com. Anthelis and witch hazel, grown in a biodynamic farm in southern Germany, are infused in the Dr. Hauska Limited Edition High Spirits Eye Crayon Duo. It's $20 at drhauska.com. And that's a crayon that has different colors on each end. Now the next issue, emissions and pollution. Global fossil fuel-related emissions of carbon dioxide reached an estimated record high of 37.1 billion metric tons in 2018, which is putting us on course for a very hot and smoggy planet. Consumers, that's us, are calling for accountability and action, and brands are responding. What's being done? The big guys are effecting big change. Several items in Garnier's Skin Active line have earned cradle-to-cradle certification, which measures environmental impact over the life of a product. And parent company, L'Oreal USA, has pledged to achieve carbon neutrality for its plants and distribution centers this year by switching to renewable energy. Fun fact, the Maybelline Great Lash Mascara sold in America are made with 100% renewable electricity. And remember those plastic microbeads from face scrubs and cleansers that were turning up in lakes and oceans and fish bellies a few years ago? They've been banned from rinse-off personal care products in the U.S. Small brands are making a difference, too. Most of Tata Harper's packaging is made from easily recyclable glass. More than 1 ton of natural resources like sand or limestone is saved for every ton of glass recycled. And the plastic used for its tubes is derived from corn rather than petroleum. What you can do, try an eco audit of your own daily beauty regimen, assessing the number of products you buy and how much waste is produced as a result. The Nature Conservancy's Carbon Calculator, go to nature.org, helps you determine your footprint, then offers tips on what you can do to decrease it. One thing you shouldn't do, clean your face with a non-biodegradable wet wipe. And you really shouldn't flush it down the toilet. Why? Just Google Fatberg. And here are some EcoPick products. Unilever charges itself a carbon tax, which supports internal emissions and waste-reducing programs when it makes Love Beauty and Planet Coconut Milk and White Jasmine Medium Hold and Volume Hairspray, $7 at Target.com, and other products. Production of Garnier Skin Active Refreshing Facial Cleanser with Aloe Juice, $9 at drugstores, uses renewable energy, less water, and sustainable packaging. And here's a sidebar, the packaging pioneer. Quote, as an industry, we have to take responsibility for the well-being of the planet, end of quote, says Seed Phytonutrients founder Shane Wolf, who worked to develop the first ever shower-friendly paper bottles made from 100% recycled material and used for the brand's shampoo, conditioners, cleansers, and hand wash. More than 60% of paper is recycled, while less than 10% of plastic is. Wolf says, quote, so any move away from plastic toward paper is a move in the right direction, end of quote. And hidden inside each bottle is a packet of seeds, which can be planted to grow heirloom herbs. Here's another issue, animal testing. This practice may not be directly related to the environment, but should concern anyone who cares about our fellow living creatures. While the U.S. is inching toward a ban, California will prohibit the sale of cosmetics that have been tested on animals starting next year, and New York and Hawaii have introduced similar legislation. Many companies have implemented their own prohibitions on testing. The EU has forbidden it outright, but it's actually still required for foreign products sold in China. For an international corporation that wants to do business there, this is a problem. What's being done? Multinationals and smaller brands alike are pushing for change in China and countries that still permit animal testing. In 2018, The Body Shop and Cruelty Free International brought a petition with 8.3 million signatures they'd gathered worldwide to the UN, calling for a global ban. What you can do, check labels for a little rabbit. It signifies that Cruelty-Free International's Leaping Bunny program has certified a product as cruelty-free. If in doubt, check Leaping Bunny's website or head to PETA to find the rigorously vetted Beauty Without Bunnies list, which ensures that neither brands nor their ingredient suppliers are spritzing hairsprays in an animal's eyes. Here are a couple of more Echo picks. CoverGirl Melting Pout Vinyl Wow in Vibrant Thing. And so this is a really hot pink. It's $11 at drugstores. It's part gloss, part lipstick, part all beautiful. Earlier this year, CoverGirl became Leaping Bunny certified, the largest brand to do so to date. And The Body Shop Cactus Blossom Body Yogurt, $15 at thebodyshop.com. A bright, fruity floral moisturizer is a purchase you can feel good about. Never tested on animals, the vegan product is crafted using organic almond milk from Spain. And one more sidebar, the Clean Beauty Visionary. Since its inception in 2013, Beauty Counter has become one of America's most trusted sources for cleaner skincare and makeup. Founder Greg Renfrew's top goal is ingredient safety. The company's Do Not Use list includes approximately 1,500 chemicals, and she views sustainability as intrinsically linked to that mission. Quote, we're committed to making decisions that are based on scientific research, but given the large data gaps around safety and sustainability, it's extremely complicated, end of quote, Renfrew says. To help close those gaps, Beauty Counter partners with researchers and universities and has screened more than 1,000 ingredients for their effects on our health and the environment. Meanwhile, Renfrew is advocating for increased federal oversight to help clean up cosmetics. She and her team have met repeatedly with D.C. lawmakers to lobby for legislation like the Personal Care Product Safety Act, which would give the FDA the power to, among other things, regulate potentially harmful ingredients. Let's look now at the refresh section of the magazine. We have a picture of a woman running, jogging on a jogging trail in her exercise gear, and she's carrying a white trash bag. A half hour of plogging burns an estimated 288 calories, 50 more than regular jogging. Let's find out what plogging is. Pickup game is the headline. This one's for you, multitaskers. Plogging, a combo of plocka up, which means pick up in Swedish, and jogging, is the act of collecting trash as you exercise. The Scandinavian cleanup movement, spearheaded by environmentalist Erik Ahlström, in response to Stockholm's heaping litter problem, has made its way stateside. And it's as simple as it sounds. You carry a lightweight bag, fill it with rubbish along your route, then toss your haul in a garbage or recycling bin when your run is done. The nonprofit Keep America Beautiful is encouraging people to post their efforts on social media with the hashtags plogging and do beautiful things. The anti-litter group also recently partnered with fitness tracking app LifeSum, which now includes the practice in its list of activities. Trust us, you'll feel extra good after logging, plogging miles. And here's a sidebar in the refresh section, 18 million. That's roughly how many mattresses end up in U.S. landfills every year, despite the fact that up to 80% of their parts are reusable, according to the Mattress Recycling Council. No one should hang on to a mattress forever. The materials tend to break down after 7 to 10 years, compromising their ability to support your body and your sleep. But some disposal options are more responsible than others. If you're buying a new mattress, look for a company that will help salvage your old one, like Casper and Brooklyn Bedding. Or call a local recycling center to see whether it accepts mattresses. Want bonus green points? Choose a brand that uses sustainable materials like organic cotton and wool. Try Hapsi or Brentwood Home. And top off your bed with eco-friendly sheets. Altera Pure's soft and breathable sets are produced at factories with a zero water waste policy. $135 to $170 at alterapure.com, so you can sleep a little easier. Here's another way to kick up your conscious consumerism a notch. You already skip plastic straws at the coffee shop. Next step, bring your own to-go container to cut down on paper and plastic waste. Check out Keep Cups Brew Line from $20 at keepcup.com. Created by two former baristas and made of shatter-resistant glass, which preserves the taste of your latte. You might also opt for oat milk, a naturally sweet dairy-free drink that can be produced using less energy than cow's milk and less water than nut milks. Find Oatly's Ultra Rich Barista Edition at a cafe near you with the locator oatly.com. And if you're loyal to your single-use coffee pods at home, you can return your spent Nespresso capsules to one of its stores or via prepaid UPS bags so their components can be repurposed. The grounds turn into topsoil or biogas, and the aluminum winds up in products like pens and knives. Visit Nespresso.com for more info. And let's look at what Oprah knows for sure to end this last installment for April. Oprah says, "I love land. Aside from my own body, it's the physical thing I value most. Every morning I walk the bountiful acreage I call home. I take care of it as if it were the most precious jewel, because to me it is sacred. I earned the right to own it, but I know for sure I'm merely the steward of this land. Like the sky that is its canopy and the ocean that laps at its southern edge, it's a treasure no person could ever own." And there's a picture of Oprah walking here, sunrise in Maui in 2016. "I get to bask in its blessings during my time here on earth. I thank and praise it for offering me so many gifts, great and small. I begin my daily walk with deep breaths and appreciation for the very air I'm taking in, oxygen you can actually see emanating from the trees in the form of mist. I'm grateful for the early morning sun warming the bark of the palm trees and rainbow eucalyptus that line what I've named Hallelujah Lane. And the grass so crystal green after a recent rain, it feels like God just made it fresh today. The tiny foliage of baby's tears growing in the stone path. Early birds on the lawn searching for worms. Crows call, call, calling in the distance. As the sun peeks over the mountains, it's a new day on our miraculous planet. Reason alone for celebration. All this is why, as I grow older and wiser, I care less about holidays. To me, every day is a blessing to be cherished. I recently watched an interview with the astronauts who back in 1968 took the iconic photo that's come to be called Earthrise. I marveled at the ecstatic joy they must have felt at their first sighting of our blue home suspended in the vast dark firmament. How small we must have appeared. How fragile our existence. How enormous our potential. How much we take it all for granted. As an imaginative exercise, I often meditate in the awareness of an observer from space. I allow each breath to take me out beyond my seated position. First, for a view from the treetops, then from 10,000 feet, then 30,000 feet, and so on, until I can see the earth and my speck of existence in the context of the much bigger picture. I think a lot about the people of the world as I imagine flying over their countries and continents headed for still black space. We have so much in common, we the people. On any given day, so many of us are doing the same thing all over the planet, looking for food, savoring shelter, sleeping, caring for our young, engaging in relationships, fighting, laughing, crying, hoping. I divine myself as a universal human. I sense the threads of consciousness that connect us all. And I believe our collective unconsciousness regarding our earth and all our children, our neglect and ill treatment, could eventually be our undoing. Here's a thought I'd like you to consider, a question I've started to ask myself regularly. How can I do better by this earth that's done so well by me? The future of life as we know it is being determined by everything we're doing and not doing now. Oprah. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.